callers. Welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Well, ladies and gentlemen, respect is absolutely the byword at Gary Knoll and GaryKnoll.com. Gary, again, is still leading the way. He did the documentary before about Four Endless Killing Her Own. He's getting ready now to, again, we're having the discussions. We'll be coming on the radio and other shows to discuss all the problems that continue on. I don't know if anybody saw the news in the last week or so, but the Army has finally acknowledged the chemical weapons in the Gulf, in Iraq, Saudi Arabia, and Kuwait. Denise, how about that? Isn't that a miracle?
It is, but right now it only covers our Operation Iraqi Freedom or Enduring Freedom. It does not go back to the Gulf War. So it opens the door for us to get our work done and get them to refocus on the Gulf War from 1991. You know, it's a perfect opening for us, and I think Gary Knoll sees that opening. And we will be having the new Research Advisory Committee that has new members on it will be meeting April 20th and 21st in D.C., and so encouraging any Gulf War vets in the East, you know, we've been putting the word out since I got advance notice of the dates, but if you're in the East Coast area and can drive up and can be there, if you live in Maryland, Virginia, anywhere, Massachusetts, all the bordering states, please come in for that meeting. It will be at VA headquarters on April 20th and 21st. All day on the 20th and then part of the day on the 21st. The vets that are coming in town will be going to the Hill and visiting legislators up in D.C. We did our push for funding for CDMRP, for illness research. We had about 70 representative significant sign-on there. We didn't have as many senators sign on. Most of them were all Democrats. This is what we have to do annually to keep our funding at the DOD Congressionally Directed Medical Research Program for Gulf War Illness Research. And we do it every year about this time in March. In April is when we have our leading sponsors put out their letter in support of this and ask their cohorts on the Hill to sign on with them. And every year I'm asking other vets to get in touch with their representatives from their state and with their senators from their state to get the interest built up and to get them to sign on to support this effort. It is a sign-on letter that the next step it goes to the Defense Appropriations Committee. And the committee starts their work after that on what the appropriations will be. So this is our way to show we have support from other members that aren't on that committee that this should be continued funding. And there was no dollar figure put to it. It was just, it's valuable, it's doing its job, it's doing what we expected, and please continue to support the funding for it so that it can continue as we need more research done to show the biomarkers, and we're focusing more and more on treatment trials to help our Gulf War vets. And vets, if you're out there, those programs are open. I know I have a page where I recruit people, Gulf War research recruitment page, where I tell you what the research is, who to contact to get involved, and go and participate. This is how we're making a difference, by getting involved with our researchers, participating in those research studies so that they're populated with the Gulf War vets that are seeking help. You know, we have to get the research done to prove that something will be helpful for us. So you have to get in there, and it's a way to really get answers of people are looking in the right direction. It's up close and personal. You participate, you're going to get benefits out of it. You're going to learn what the researchers are doing. None of it is like guinea pig work at all. I mean, it's been focused a lot on the diagnostics, a lot on the biomarkers. But more and more we have treatment trials, and none of those treatment trials, and I review them closely, none of them are what I would call guinea pig work. I mean, it's safe, using something they've used before in another field of practice. and bringing it forward for us to see if it helps. So we need veterans participating in that, and as we get those things done, we should start seeing some of these things implemented in the VA. That's the next battle, is to get them to implement those items into the VA and make standard clinical diagnosis procedures available, and to, you know, get them educated and informed on some of the treatments that may work, and to get it out there clinically for the vets. We've done a lot of work on compensation on the claims. We're still working on that. We still have an 80% denial, but we've had the effort to be directly in touch with the Undersecretary for Benefits, and when things are going screwy with your claims, if you communicate clearly with her, she's notifying the regional office to take another look at your claim. You know, there's a lot of training that has to go on all the way across, and I think slowly, much too slow, but if we relate it back to past history, be it World War I with mustard gas, there was no treatments known. Had respiratory problems, they dealt with them best they could. We had the atomic vets that have developed significant cancers and died. Then we had the Agent Orange vets. They finally proved that it was there in the body from the fat tissue, and that's what opened the door to them on their presumptive claims. And it's a step-by-step process and review as veterans have those problems of having to fight through the Institute of Medicine to get them added to the presumptive list. We are doing the same thing. They do the same thing over and over again. We've had to prove our case, people. The research that your fellow Gulf War vets have fought for each year to get funding, this is the research we need to make headway in how to diagnose this stuff, whether it's PTSD, whether it's traumatic brain, or whether it's Gulf War illness. And the researchers that I've met and dealt with, which I've met almost all of them, I think, they're really trying to help. And if we can show methods of diagnosing it, that's going to make it easier for your claims. If we show ways to treat, you know, and find the biomarkers that will lead us more effectively to looking at what medications should be used, that's all going to make a difference. We're 24 years into this, and being an educated nurse that had a master's degree in research and, you know, went into that end of it, I see that there's hope, and we cannot lose hope. We cannot just beat on the VA. We have to go through the steps with our researchers and proving the point, and that's what we're doing, and that's what will make the difference all the way around for us.
Now, let's come back to the latest information, and Ray and Johnny, are you guys there?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes.
I want to come back to the latest stuff on the ChemBio stuff. I mean, the story broke about a week ago confirming the chemical agents in Iraq. I mean, again, the shells were there. The stuff was left over from what was blown up before, so it's a littered mess over there. And then the other thing, too, is real interesting in the story, is they totally confirmed what we'd said all along about Andres and Tom Little and everybody and Ulrich had all confirmed that we said that the medical records were ordered destroyed. So that's confirmed in the story. The latest thing came out yesterday, and it came out on the early bird brief, and Rollo sent it to me. And it was a letter saying the Army is now looking for the people that were exposed to the chemical agents. And they gave a number in there for everybody to call, and that number to call is 1-800-497-6261. Now, guess what? It's Mikey Kilpatrick's old number. There's a Dr. Smith who's replaced Mikey now that Mikey's retired. And then from there, they sent me up to, when I talked to them today, we had a nice long conversation about all the stuff that's happening, and it's kind of a confusing thing. Yeah, it is OIF-OND, but as we talked to the day, I talked to Army Public Health Command, and they're up there in the, also in the next thing, and their phone number is 410-436-2714. See, if you call Mikey's number, then they refer you to that other number, and we filled them in and again went around and around.
Okay, let's give those numbers one more time slowly.
Okay, the first number is the number to call if you think you were exposed to chemical warfare agents at any time. and that's 1-800-497-6261. That's Kilpatrick's old line. That's the Deployment Health Office where Mikey Kilpatrick worked and Bernie Rosker. And then what they're doing is they're collecting the data for the Army Public Health Command. And I talked to the Army Public Health Command guy in charge of it up there. They sent me from Mikey's office up there this morning. And their phone number is 410-436-2714. Now, the conversation I had in both places, again, they know us all too well, Denise. And Johnny and Ray, I think they're going to get to know you guys too, is the fact that we've been saying this all along, and they've just been in denials, and now they're caught with their pants down again. And so they're having to acknowledge everything. When I talked to Army Public Health today, and the guy was very nice when I talked to him, and again, he agrees that, yeah, we're acknowledging it's there now, which means, yeah, you guys are right. It had to be there before because it doesn't show up magically. So he said that they're having the big discussions up at the Assistant Secretary of the Army level right now is where the discussion is on about all the exposures. Well, in the meantime, this is the reason we got Ray and Johnny here. We're going to continue our conversation. The vets aren't getting the care they need. We absolutely 100% confirmed here in Champaign, Illinois, Chicago Regional Office that veterans' claims were shoved in the files and not processed. I mean, 100% confirmation, not even a question. The regional office director had to acknowledge that in the meeting we had here because the local VA jumped right into it and said, hey, that's the truth, guy. You got to get around it. So when the vet runs into trouble and the vet can't see a way out, they got all these child and spouse problems, Ray and Johnny, this is where you guys got to come in and some answers. I mean, you guys just wrote an incredible paper here that you gave to me a couple days ago, Ray, on, you know, where the vet is and what's causing the problems, what's underlying everything and a way out. Can you go over that a little for us today?
Yeah, Doug, I work mainly probably with post-traumatic stress. It's something that I'm acquainted with, and also the more I dig, it's like, you know, digging a hole on the farm and everything looked great, but now you're starting to find these dead bodies laying everywhere, and first thing you know, you got a forensic thing in there and a crime scene, and that's what we're looking at. I mean, you know, a lot of these guys we're dealing with today, the young guys that are coming into the military, they've already got post-traumatic stress from the parents and the grandparents that have been overseas and come back, and they're having all these problems, and they pass it on to their children, and they're having marriages and multiple marriages and all these type of things. The kids are the ones who's being affected by it. So by the time they get 18 and 19 years old, they've had all they ever want with a family because it's been a dysfunctional family. It's been a devastated family they've been living in. There's been alcohol and drugs and pornography through the television and computer and everything, and kids have been mutilated along the way emotionally. And by the time they get into the military, they come in there with problems, Doug, and it's like and what it is, it's collateral damage from what the guys you're talking about.
Yeah, so this is all originating because when we look at the enlistment data and the demographics that we've been looking at here for the last week or so, it gets real frightening because these individuals are coming in from the lower echelons of society. Their educational capability, when we look at the results on both AFQT and the ASVAB test scores, they're horrid. I mean, we basically got maybe 10% of the current enlisted population, that cohort group, that could go to a junior college or a college and get an education because they just don't have the academic preparation to the qualifications. And so they're coming in, like you said, I mean, the baggage they're coming in with is staggering.
We
didn't think about that, do we? We forget that these kids and everything with these broken homes and dysfunctional families and drug and alcohol abuse, we don't think about that, do we?
No, we really don't. And, I mean, I think we're just starting to consider it. I was with a group last night, and they had a group meeting, and Johnny was part of that a few weeks ago. It was like a round table type of thing. And when I was talking to these folks, they had all the questions, Doug. They had all the, we want more people, we want more learned people to come and tell us about all the problem. But they weren't even looking for answers, I don't think. And the answers are in front of us. We just have to find those answers, and we have to be able to give these kids some help so we can get them straightened out a little bit. That, you know, they came in because of maybe a degree of patriotism. They wanted to serve their country, but they also wanted to finish their education. They wanted to maybe start their career out. And what they were really looking for was a family, because the military is a family. It's a very close-knit family. And what I wrote in that paper was, let me read it. It says, the military, it's a close-knit worldwide community of like-minded people who willingly put their lives on hold in order to protect us at home. They risk their lives every day to keep us free, and they are connected by a common mindset of values, exceptionalism, and purpose. They are patriotic, and they're truly America's best. Well, saying that, that's a wonderful family to join. That's something they've never had. A lot of these kids are joining gangs in neighborhoods because they don't have a family at home.
So they're going to the gangs because they don't have a family. The gang provides some family structure and outline for them, so they jump into the gang, huh?
They're looking for love. They're looking for, camaraderie, inclusion, all these things they didn't have at home. Because
the military is the best there is at that, aren't they?
Right. Well, that's what draws people. That's what drew me into the military was, my family was fragmented because of my mother's death, and half of my family left home and everything and left the three of us. But later on, my brother came back from Vietnam wounded, and so we visited him at the hospitals about every weekend for several months in Jacksonville, Florida. And every time we'd go there, I would see all these young guys in there that were wounded. But, boy, they were like family. They were laughing and joking and talking and all this stuff. And that's what I missed. I missed family, and I grew up without that family. And I think that's what drew me in there. So I speak from a personal knowledge of what I wrote about in that thing that I wrote you. And I'll be speaking at Camp Lejeune on that same subject about how do we get them fixed. What do we do? I mean, we know the problem. Where do we go from here?
So we're looking, and this is one thing you and I communicated back and forth, and somehow we tiptoe around all of this, and I understand why we tiptoe around it, because it's getting to the core of the ethical and the moral crisis and the true moral damage, ethical damage that's happened to the soul. You join this family with like-minded souls, you know, you're believing, you're fighting for your country, you're protecting the freedom, and then we get over and find out, wait a minute, we just killed all and bombed all these people, contaminated air, water, and soil. And these guys couldn't even thought about going from the next town. They had no threat to us. But then what is going on? So now we have this incredible, which I'm picking up, ethical and moral crisis, where the guy has this myth, this idea, and everything that he believed in. And either the conscious mind or the subconscious mind is going, wait a minute, it ain't what I think it is it?
No, and then you come back home, and they have it, what do they call it, moral injury.
Correct.
Where you've been injured on top of all the injury you have, and then physical injuries and such as that. And you come back, and you're really messed up. And a lot of people will instantly turn to substance abuse as a self-medication type of thing. They hide their problems. And what I tried to do in this letter that I sent you was I was going to post that, but I wanted people to understand that you've got to start with a point of saying, okay, I've got a problem. You may not tell everybody, but you have to recognize that if you're ever going to get help. And so these guys do have to do that. And I put down 10 different things on that thing, and I have kind of tweaked it a little bit. But there's 10 different things down there that help them other than therapy and medication. Those things are good, Doug, but you can't fix a man with those things because he's internally messed up. And you can't get to the hurt. And so, the guy's going to have to forgive somebody for what's over with if he's going to move on. But one thing I put down was if you're having problems with post-traumatic stress, you know, they're all kind of symptoms of hyperventilation and you're hyper and you're moody and you're depressed and all these things. But you have to figure out, is there something that's feeding the flames? Is it something that makes me more irritable, makes me more prone to violence? And a lot of times it will be substance abuse in the military. And so what they have to do is find out what is feeding those flames and then step back and maybe eliminate that. One of the scriptures I talk about a lot, it says that where there is no wood, the fire goes out. And what it's talking about is if you remove the fuel from the fire, it will go out. So you have to realize what is causing more problems. If it is alcohol or drugs or whatever it is, you might not be able to do that anymore because it's costing you too much to do it. It's costing you everything you have.
I think this combination of alcohol and drugs, I mean, we've got the prescribed medications that we need, and pain meds are becoming an essential part of life for the Operation Desert Storm, Operation Iraqi Freedom, all these guys because of the injuries they have.
Right.
So you have these pain meds that you have to take, but then with everything, the baggage on top of this, then you start going into alcohol. And I might have learned a long time ago that I can't even sniff alcohol on my meds without getting into trouble.
Yeah, that's right.
So this just spirals out of control. Now, the thing that I don't understand, because I never got into this, somehow I was lucky to get away with it, and I don't know what it was. It had to be from the fact that I came from a family that was intact, maybe. But when this starts spiraling out of control and you're reaching for either the street drugs or the alcohol as a crutch, does the guy or the vet, the guy or the girl even know that that's happening?
Well, I think they're trying to not feel or not remember, and they're trying to be social, and they're trying to be funny. When they're hurting on the inside, you're trying to put a face on. And I think alcohol does that a lot of times. It's a social drug, and people do it. Nobody knows when to say when. That's one thing about it. It's simply, I used to go from use to abuse without even realizing it. And that's what happens. If you get stopped on the way home, it's going to cost you $10,000 for a driving offense. And that's going to add to your problems big time, or the family's problems. You lose your license. You might lose your job. You might be put out of the Marine Corps. You might be, whatever it is, it's going to affect you for a long time. And so you have to realize the consequences if you're going to play the games. You know, somebody said one time, if you're going to play adult games, you've got to have to understand adult consequences. And they do follow all those things. They're not going to have mercy because you have post-traumatic stress. They say, everybody's got that. Well, you know what? Most people do have it from something. It's post-trauma. If you've ever been traumatized, it could have been a car wreck or anything else. But the difference is, I really believe, between post-traumatic stress and post-traumatic stress disorder would be a car wreck is post-traumatic stress. A car wreck for every day for a year would be a post-traumatic stress disorder. It is a continuation. If you get slapped around every day you get home from school, if you get cussed out, if you get things thrown at you, you're going to have trauma. And a lot of these guys are suffering, and I see it. My heart breaks for them. I don't know what to do, but try to get all the information I can to them and help them to make a conscious decision. You know, I tell them, Doug, to find a goal. What is your goal? What do you want to do in life? You're in the military. Do you want to stay in there? Do you want to get out and go to college? Do you want to whatever? You have to have a goal. But then you have to have focus, because if you lose your focus on your goal, you'll lose the goal. We have a kata in the martial arts that I teach, and it's called a dynamic tension breathing kata. It's got about 150 techniques where you're stepping, you're blocking, you're punching, you're doing all these things. But while you're doing it, they're beating on you. They're breaking stuff over top of you. And so you have to literally put it all out of your mind and do that kata. And it teaches you to focus on what you have to do and don't let anything stop you from doing it. So it makes you more aware of what's happening around you, and it's a good life lesson also.
So I think when we're coming down, we look at the demographics on the military personnel, and we're looking at another cutback, so we're going to have a lot of junior enlisted and some senior enlisted and officers being put out because there's just no more room at the feeding trough.
Yeah.
And so these guys got the medical problems complicated with maybe PTSD. They got alcohol and drug abuse. Now, if you've been in the military and the infantry, you actually haven't got any job qualifications or anything. The horrible thing is, when I looked at the demographics, yeah, maybe some of these guys did graduate from high school, but their high school preparation was totally inadequate, necessary for job preparation. So now we have inadequate high school preparation to go either vocational education or into straight academic education in the professional fields. We have short-term memory problems, which affects learning ability and memory on the job. I mean, Denise, how many doctors and nurses had to quit medicine because of the memory problems?
Exactly.
I mean, that's a staggering problem. I mean, we had one of the great doctors you and I both know out of Tennessee that had to quit. This was an incredible Army doctor. And so we're seeing this thing, and now they're coming out and they're saying, well, okay, let's get to the academic qualifications or the job qualifications. Well, I taught emergency medicine and chemical bio stuff for the military and the avionics. Let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, unless I'm missing something, all that training you got in the military, which is a few months' worth of training, is about the equivalent of one college semester, maybe two college semester courses in that stuff. Because it's very focused, and it's a recipe base where you're just, you know, swapping things in and out. So it's not where you have a thorough understanding you can do stuff. There's a big push right now, and again, it's been you'll read about in the Army Times and everything, is getting the qualifications. Well, if you want to get those, you're going to have to go study because you're going to have to take an exam at some point. I mean, if you're going to be a practical nurse, you have to have an exam. If you're going to be an EMT, you have to take a written exam. If you're going to be a truck driver, you have to take a written exam. So, I mean, how do we get the guy prepared when he's got all of this baggage surrounding around him to be successful?
He's got to become focused on his goal, Doug. That's the only thing I can tell him. And he can find ways of, and there are assistants out there that will help him. Johnny's kind of on the cutting edge of this thing because he's dealing with people that are suicidal and he's people who have given up on life itself. And he might have some, you know, insight in how to approach these people or something. So
I sure do. Ray, thanks a lot for that. Real quick, and back to what you were saying on the quality of personnel. And now let's go back. This happened during my storm. Whenever you got a war going on and it gets hot and heavy, just like Vietnam did, the military has a tendency to put in, to relax the standards and let a lot of people that during peacetime into the military that would not have come in before, just like the draft. When the draft was instituted during Vietnam, they basically said jail or the military. Now, in 2000, from 2005 to about 2008, when things were hot and heavy in Iraq, they relaxed the standards of people getting into the military. So you had a lot of people that were less than desirable. And let's face it, the recruiters were not on Beverly Hills Boulevard recruiting. They were down in the urban areas. They were down in the poverty-stricken areas getting these folks in. They were giving them waivers to get in the military. So now we dial the clock up almost 10 years later. The wars are winding down. We got a huge problem going on. The military's kicking people out left and right. And those that stay in the military now, and I can say this from experience, I was in the military middle 90s during the drawdown. I had to go to college. I had to stand out to just be able to get to the next rank. So I had to, in the military, get a college degree, and that's what it takes these days. But what we're finding, and by working on Camp Lejeune and Fort Bragg and Pope Air Force Base, the plan is simple. You got to get out. We know what the problem is. Okay, we all agree on what the problem is. We could talk about the problem all day long, but you have to back it up with faith. And like Ray was saying, we got to be. There's a spiritual element to this. There really is, but there's also the action. Faith leads to action. Action leads to results. We got to get out there and talk to these young men and women. We've been fortunate enough to be invited back to Camp Lejeune. Ray, I got that email this morning. Last month was our first month of actually sitting in with therapists that are doing some intensive outpatient therapy with Marines and sailors that are dealing with post-traumatic stress, military sexual trauma. And some of these folks, when we sit down with them and we told them our personal story, some of these folks had not been deployed. There was one young woman there, you could tell that she was, you know, really distraught. She had never been overseas. Something bad had happened to her here. But by us talking to these young men and women about the things that we've dealt with, just for instance, Ray, you were with us the second time we did that. I got an email this morning from the staff up at the Naval Hospital on Camp Lejeune. They said that was so successful from what we we did, can we come out again this month, carte blanche, and do it again? And that's what it's going to take, people that's gone through that element, to be able to help these young men and women through the next. If not, we're going to be here 40 to 50 years from now, where a lot of the guys that call my crisis line right now are actually Vietnam vets. Now, that's totally unacceptable. That means 45, 50 years ago, this simple plan was not put in place to lead these young men and women to help. And that don't mean just tell them what to do. You got to show them what to do. You got to give them the resources. You got to follow up and follow through, just like any other, anything else. The key is to follow up and follow through. And like I tell a lot of other people, and Ray, we talked about this Monday, people don't know, don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And guys like Ray are on the forefront of getting out there, talking to these young men and women, and leading them to that next step. And simply by listening to somebody that's been there and done that, it's worth its weight in gold. Then you bring a level, and it doesn't matter how many degrees you got behind your name, you being a level of, they like to call it street credibility, to the table. People would inherently listen to you when they know that you've been through the same thing. And that's what we're doing. My wife formed a nonprofit organization dedicated to suicide prevention, crisis intervention with the military community and their family members. And we have to remember that it's not only our warriors that are dealing with this, it's our family members. They're often the unsung heroes in it all. And I say that for two reasons. I'm going to say that and I'm going to shut my mouth. I've been the 21-year military guy on the front lines. I was infantry the whole time, but I've also been a family member. And I will tell you right now, being a family member, and I had to bring some training to the table being a family member, that is the single most stressful situation when you got a son or a daughter. Like my son was deployed overseas quite often. I was a nervous wreck, and I would have gladly traded spots with him and been over there. And you know, when he came back and I was talking to my wife, I had to tell my wife, she was with me my whole military career. I said, honey, you know, I'm so sorry that I didn't realize how hard this was on the family until I became a family member myself. So in order to help our warriors, we have to help their families too. And there's got to be that total package. And that's one of the things that my wife formed with her nonprofit, is to help out in the behavioral health side. And we call that the Strengthening Our Military Family Resiliency Program, where we're going to have to just talk about it. It comes from people that's been, surround yourself with enough people out there that know what you're talking about, and then go out there and help them. That's what you're going to have to do.
Tell him your son is reading my book too. That's cool.
Of course, yeah. My son, now, Doug, last show we talked a little bit about my son. My son, you know, of course, you know, he was in college. He got the patriotic bug, so he wasn't from a broken home. He wasn't from any of that. He was like he joined the military basically when it was hard to get in. Okay. Now, my son went to as far as you could go without dying. I'm talking, you know, family fell apart. You know, the whole drama with all that. My son finally, with a lot of help and a lot of guidance from his mom and myself, and just figuring out what to do with this guy, we learned so much by just having our boots on the ground. This guy now, he's living a lot more productive life. He's reading Ray's book. He hasn't wanted to read anything in years. This weekend, he was home with us. I met up with Ray and Laura on Monday. Ryan came up to me and said, Pops, I want you to get a signed copy from Ray. I want to start reading his book. And I read Ray's book five times. It's helped me tremendously. And I just believe that having that street credibility like Ray has, bar none, is going to help lead. It's just another tool that we have to lead these young men and women to say, hey, you know what, I do have a problem, and I do want some help. And there is help out here, and it's going to come from people that are working like Ray and Laura and Carmen and myself. We decided that we're going to work this simple base solution plan and get out here and speak to many of these young men and women. And you know, we're still talking to the Vietnam vets too. Every day I was meeting with some of them this morning that are finally getting some help for the first time in 50 years, and that's 50 years of failed marriages, being drunk, being in trouble, and not being able to see their children. And you know, if we don't stop this now that we have a chance that everybody agrees that there's a problem, well, now the hardest thing is to start talking about it. And if that means I got to tell my personal story to help some people, then that's what it's going to take. So in 40 years from now, the people that are doing, that are getting out of the military, that's been on multiple deployments, and their family members, if we can help them now, in 40 years from now, we're not talking about this problem anymore. It's been solved, and we were part of it. So we have a big opportunity, and Ray, we were talking about this the other day, to create a generational mind shift. Because let's face it, my grandfather I had two, both of my grandfathers. One of my grandfathers I never had the opportunity to meet. He died during the Bataan Death March. But my other grandfather was Omaha Beach. He had problems in his life. Now that I start thinking about it and remembering, he liked to booze it a little bit. He had a short temper, and that did bleed down. My father was a Chosun Marine. He was also a cop for many, many years, and that bled down a little bit through me. So everybody has somebody in their family, if you are honest with yourself. And I ask this to a lot of people that I sit down and I, or when I'm speaking in front of. I don't have anybody raise their hand, but I do ask them, who in here is close to anybody in the military? Everybody in the room does raise their hand. I said, who in here has somebody in their family or a friend that they know that might have completed a suicide? Everybody in the room's hands go up. And I ask everybody a simple question. I said, you don't have to raise your hands on this one due to the confidentiality. I said, but think back in your family. Was there a grandfather, a grandmother, an uncle, a cousin, or somebody that had you know, a few problems? And you can see everybody's face just kind of sit there and shake their head yes. So that means everybody's dealing with this. Everybody knows that, and they got some personal connection to it. You know, we all grew up in, Doug, you grew up in the same time frame. I'm a little bit younger than you guys, but we all grew up watching and Leave It to Beaver, Beaver and the Cleavers. Well,
absolutely.
You know, that
that's
may
the house,
exist.
That's the kind of lifestyle I grew up in.
Well, I'll tell you what, you're the actual exception and not the rule. I mean, in reality, most people, that doesn't exist. You know, when you're down here and you're talking to people, I mean, them are the kind of people that, you know, were really not coming in the military, especially in the last, since 2006, 2007. That and if they have, that's the very, very exceptional. So that leaves us on the cusp of having a major, major challenge for this next generation. We're just starting to see the tip of the iceberg. You know, now they're letting these folks out of the military. That was one of the biggest reasons we had to get on the bases, so we can catch them before these folks become veterans. Catch them while they're still active duty. It's like pulling teeth to get on the base. We were actually able to do it.
The thing that I look at when I come back to see and understand everything, okay, in order to be successful, the individual is going to, they're coming out of the military, okay, no matter where their career ended. Maybe at the beginning they went for 3 or 4 years, or they're in the midterm and they can't finish the retirement, or they're at a retirement age, or they get medically trashed and they get put out medically. But either way, they have to start out with an educational basis. Now, that educational basis, whether it be vocational training for one of the skilled trades or go into academia and become a professional, either way, you've got to do it. The neat thing about the military, and this is one thing that I picked up, is the discipline and the perseverance that if you really spent your time in the military, you learned, that gives you a step up on when you get into academia, whether it be vocational training or academia, that all you have to do is persevere through it and ask for help, that you're going to get through this stuff, and then you can start succeeding. Because it seems to me, once you get a good job, and that self-esteem comes up, and you can take care of your family,
yeah,
you're not going to fall back on all these crutches and have disintegration upon disintegration.
You can be Uncle Jim that everybody talks about. They want their kids to be like you. You could, regardless, you know, and you can't let your past traumas define who you are and who you're going to be for the rest of your life. We've realized that too late, but they've got time to do something about it. Doug, they can reverse the cycle if they will push on and just draw a line in the sand and say, I'm moving on from here. I'm not going to be in this time warp.
I'm not going to be pulled down by the traumas that I went through. I'm going to keep my eyes straight ahead, and I don't care what tries to stop me. I'm not going to do it. And I believe if you get them to think that way, there may be a chance for them.
And you know, Ray, by saying that, and that's how we all feel, and that's how we're doing. It took a long time to get to this level. You know, we can't expect somebody that's been, you know, down in the muck, I like to call it, in the swamp, to us tell them that, and right away they're going to pick up on that. Okay, that's where the follow-up and follow-through comes through, and to help them, because, you know, saying that, and it may sense to them, but when somebody's stuck in a rut so far down, it's going to take repetition and them knowing somebody that cares that's going to lead them and be with them through our Warrior Advocacy Project. That's what we're going to be doing here in North Carolina, around the nation, is the vision goal. But to take these young men and women, get them in here, get them some help, but follow through. And we're going to take it as a case-by-case basis. We're going to base that on the individual and where they're at. You know,
now, one of the things that you wrote in your paper that you sent me, and the key thing, again, is the cohort group or what you go back into. So if you're getting out of the military, you can't, even though it might look like it, but you can't go back into that nightmare where you came from or get messed up with, again, with these social groups that are on the fringes of society.
Right.
Because that's just going to, lead you back into the nightmare, isn't it?
Yeah, I tell them to choose your friends wisely, even in the military, because who you hang around has a lot to do with what you think and what you do. If you're hanging around negative people and people who don't want to go to college, all they want to do is party, all this stuff, you've got to break ties with that. You've got to go out on your own. It's every man for himself and every woman for herself. And you can't afford to hang around people who are bringing you down. You're going to have to hang around some intelligent people and some academic people, and you're going to have to be challenged by them to do what you need to do. The other people, you know, they're going to do what they do anyway.
You get this opportunity. I mean, say if you want to go into the trades, you get in a union, or you get in one of those union trades or anything, you're going to have to set the alcohol and drugs aside other than what you need for medical needs. But you're going to have to clean up your act. You're going to have to get, you know, a haircut, decent clothes, and all the hygiene things. So it's the whole presentation of that whole picture that comes together to make it successful, isn't it?
Well, you know, you look at people who have done drugs or alcohol, and I'd say this very humbly and very compassionately, but, you know, it's like, well, what they call sin item. That's what some of these states and stuff call it, you know, sin tax. Alcohol and drugs and all the stuff. It gives you a hard, harsh look over time. And you're going to be in competition with the rest of this world that is trying. Some of these kids are trying that maybe did make it, like yourself, Doug, that you came out of a household totally unlike any of the house I came out of, or maybe Johnny or Denise or whoever, that you were fortunate in that. You didn't even realize it. But they're going to be competing with those folks, and they can't afford to be you know, brutish looking and harsh looking and all that. They may be a great person, but all those things do take an effect on the human body. If you're not nourishing your body like it should be, it's going to show up. If you're putting things in your body that is altering things, it's going to show up. And you can't hide it. You might think you can, but you can't hide it. I thought my son looked wonderful last time I saw him in Florida, but we picked my son up and took him to an alcohol rehabilitation center for 2 years. I thought he looked wonderful. He had a haircut. He was shaved. He looked great. I took him in there, and when he stood beside all these other people that had been sober for all these months and years, he looked terrible. He looked sick. He looked awful. And what it was life will just beat the life right out of you, Doug, when you're doing things that are really contrary to good health and you know, good life. It will beat you bad, and so it will. You're competing against those in the marketplace, and so you have to take care of yourself if you're going to succeed.
No, I've seen this thing, and again, I couldn't understand this because, again, I came from a different group, but you'd have the individuals that go to work at 7:30 in the morning, get off at 3:30 in the afternoon. The first thing they do, they're popping a beer open. Well, I never did that because in my job I had to go back and study or do some more reading or get ready for work for the next day, or I had a grade exams or, you know, great homework, whatever I was doing.
You had a focus.
It's an entirely different life cycle. And what I sense, and this is from teaching at everything from kindergarten through graduate school now in the military a lot, everybody has the capability and the ability to excel and succeed. I firmly believe that. It's just a matter of perseverance and making the conscious decision with the help that, hey, I'm going to do it.
That's right. It's the choices you make. And I tell folks all the time, try to make the best choices you can and make as few regrets as possible, because you're going to have to live with yourself the rest of your life. It helps you to understand that sometimes when you really, you know, confront it.
You know, Ray, you're so right on there. And I was just thinking about it, about something, and it left me real quick, but it'll come back to me. Ray, you say this all the time, you know, and everybody always knows the old steerage, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Ray likes to add something in there and says, yeah, but you can put a lot of salt in his food before you take him to that trough. So that's what we need to do, and a lot of these people that are stuck in that rut are socially numb, and they're doing it to hide the pain, and they just don't know any other way. So with Ray, I want to appreciate what you're doing and, you know, leading the fight in that, and Doug as well, for letting us get out here in the national realm and promote what we're doing. And these little things, believe it or not, are working for some people. Some, you know, some people you can do a lot of things for, it won't work. But there's one thing: if you fail to plan, you're going to plan to fail. So that's just where we're coming from, and thanks a lot for that, and that's exactly what I was going to say. It came back to me. So,
you know, the important thing is, when I had on Monday, our congressman was back here, and I set it up and requested it, so I sat down with a one-on-one, me to our congressman, John Shimkus, presented all this stuff. Ray, as I said, you know, I gave him the briefing you guys had put together, handed that to his fingertips, and we went over it. But, again, everybody can make that impact. And, again, whatever you choose to do, Denise, you've been doing this forever and ever and ever. You just gave us an update on how to make a big difference in Washington. I guess it's reaching out and doing something. Each one of us has this incredible gift that we've been given where we can contribute and make a difference, whether it's just working with your family or maybe it's working on a car or building a house. But it's like, grab that and run with it.
Yeah, correct. You know, Doug, I mean, that has a lot to it. I appreciate everything you're doing, and I appreciate what Gary is doing and what Denise is doing and Johnny. I think all of us, it's just like you just said, we may be working in different areas, but we're trying to get to certain people. And if you can reach certain, like, therapists, and you can give them a little bit of knowledge, even coming from left field like myself, who I sadly say I lived a lot of this stuff. I know what it is to divorce. I know what it is to have children messed up. I know what it is to see your children going down the wrong road, and you can't do anything about it because they're living with their mother or something, or their other spouse, whatever. And it's a hurtful place. But there is certain amount of stuff we can give back, and maybe therapists that are working with these guys can get a little bit of this information, and maybe they can put it to work, and they'll be able to help some of these guys. We'll never see them. But, you know, my book is reaching so many people, Doug, I can hardly believe it. But it's reaching them, and I get emails and telling me that the book changed their life. It really helped them to get a grip and realize they don't have to be beat up their whole life. They can make something of themselves, even though they're 60 years old. They can still contribute.
And, well, I mean, it's sort of like, well, it's all of us got together because of the McNeelys.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I spent the day with Mike McNeely today. So he told me to tell you hello, Doug, by the way.
Yeah, Mike is incredible. I got to find John and get together. The weather and everything kind of nailed us. And, when Mike came on our radio show and he talked about all the POWs and everything else, it was incredible. And, I mean, and John got us together with you guys. I mean, how strange is this? It's almost as if there's a plan up and beyond anything that we comprehend.
I truly believe it,
sir. Oh, it is. Oh, yeah.
And I want to be part of that plan. And I told somebody recently, I said, I'll rest when it's over with. But for right now, it's like walking uphill. And, man, there's dead bodies all over the place, but there's still some living ones. They're wounded. They're hurt.
but we're able to at least get to them and maybe put a little medication there, and who knows, maybe they'll walk with us for a while.
You know, all of the pain and everything, Denise, all of us are, you know, with Paul's suicide. I mean, we saved Paul once before. We couldn't save him this time because he lost all hope and everything. And
that's right.
I truly understand why he lost all hope. But for all of us, no matter who we are and doesn't matter what our educational level, that pain that's in our heart, that pain that goes through us, and I mean, I don't know, for Denise, I mean, for me, trying to sleep after all of this stuff the last few weeks has been horrible. I mean, nightmare upon nightmare upon nightmare. And I think that's just a normal response for the body trying to deal with the traumas that keep happening to everybody.
Yeah, right.
That's true. That's exactly what, Doug, in a nutshell, in simple layman's terms, that's what post-traumatic stress is. It's a normal reaction to an abnormal situation. And these day and times, everything's an abnormal situation. I mean, look at the news. So, and that's what it all is in a nutshell. That's what's happening to you, and it's a very traumatic thing to lose a close friend to death, much less a completed suicide. You know, and our hearts go out to you and your team, and to Paul and his family. You know, we cannot never allow. That's why we're going to have to deal so much locally. We put too much confidence and too much faith into these national organizations. We need to get back down to grassroots, boots on the ground. The change is going to come from the local level.
Now, how do we get people involved to help us? So, because what I've learned, everything else, the average John Doe out there, or Jane Doe, they not only don't understand this, they don't want to know anything about it, they don't want to have anything to do, because once they recognize the problem, then somehow it requires an action. And when it requires an action, it requires responsibility. And once you take responsibility, then you have all the consequences that all of us have struggled with. How do we break that cycle to where we get people to acknowledge, admit, participate, and contribute?
Well, here's the deal, and we take this from lessons learned. We've all heard of the Sons of Liberty, I'm sure. Five guys sit around the table back over 200 years ago and got sick and tired, and most people told them they were crazy and they weren't behind them. Well, they persevered, and they found a few other like-minded individuals, and we went on to win our independence from Britain. If them five guys wouldn't have took a lot of flack and been told that they didn't know what they were talking about, they were traitors, if they didn't do that, our nation wouldn't exist today. So that's where we're at. We're going to have to find, we don't need everybody, because most people, Doug, they ain't going to do anything. Okay, most people want their remote control, and they're dancing with the stars, and hey, that's great, but we only need a few key people. That's it, and we can make the change, and then a whole lot of action.
I don't want to minimize at all what you and Denise are doing, because when they started with one guy and decided to give him a Purple Heart, so he would, from injuries with, I think it was gas, he was mustard gas, I think it was. But that was a crack in the dam. And from a crack, it can start opening up. And then first thing you know, the dam's going to break. There's a lot of guys that are hurting, have been hurting, have died over the last few years because of things happened during the 90s that they weren't aware of. But they were subject to it, and they hushed it up. They buried it, hope it never show up again. But it did, and it's showing up because of people like yourself is trying to make people aware. You made me aware. I had no idea of the expanse of everything that was happening, and I truly appreciate that, Doug.
You know, one thing that bugs me completely, all these national veterans organizations, these veterans groups, they're pulling money down from everybody. But unfortunately, you don't see any real help coming from them. How do we get those people to break away from their charter to hold on to the myth and start helping? I mean, what does
you reveal how crooked they are.
Well, here's what we did, Doug. Simple. I belong to a VFW post in the city of Rocky Mountain, North Carolina, post 2057. This post here is on the forefront, and it's the local post. It ain't the National Veterans of Foreign Wars of post-traumatic stress, helping the veterans, getting these young men and women in there, helping them financially, doing whatever it takes to get them on their feet. We're not sitting around playing bingo, and I ain't saying there's anything wrong with playing bingo and drinking in the bars, but we exist, and we voted on it, and we decided as men in that, and women in that group, that we're here for a reason. We're here for the veteran. We're here for that warrior and his family. We're going to do whatever it takes to help in that. And that's where that change comes again from the local level, because the people up at the national, they're not, I mean, the politics ain't going to allow it. But the people at them local level in the service organizations, and we're getting some of the local American Legions on board with us to do the same thing. So let's get out here and help. Let's start walking the walk that we've all been talking for so long. It's time to, the buck stops here, and it's time for action. The talk is cheap. You know, people are dying. You know, we did an event at Pope Air Force Base about 3 weeks ago. And we sit down. There was a person there from DOD. I can't remember her name. But the government agrees on about 22 veteran suicides a day. She was honest. She said that they believed up at the DOD that there was, she had almost a whole room stand up. There was 120 young airmen and airwomen in that room. She said the DOD believes that's how many are actually taking their lives every day. And that's just on the veteran side. That don't include the active duty military. So we're getting more and more by talking about that. And we're getting these local organizations that have been in existence for many, many years back to the grassroots of why they were started in the first place. Eventually, one day, we'll get the VA to realize the only reason there's a VA is because it was created after the Civil War to help veterans. One time, they'll figure that out and realize that's why they're there, too. But for right now, there's a lot of things we can do at the local level and the everyday things. So I would suggest that you go to your local VFW, you speak to their chain of command, and say, hey, this is what we need to do. We're the people that's got to lead the fight and help these young men and women, and then start walking the walk.
Well, I know this conversation is going to continue with Gary Knoll. He's got his documentary out there, Killing Our Own, you know, Gulf War Illness, Killing Our Own. He's working on others. We're going to have more shows specifically with him. I know all of us are involved in planning this. It's going to continue on, and we're just going to make a difference piece by piece.
I believe that.
I don't see any other way around it. We've got to do it.
We've got to do it. We've crossed the Rubicon, Doug. There's no going back. You know that we crossed the Rubicon. We blew the bridge. There's no going back. It's forward's the only way. And you know, if we work hard and we do our due diligence and we work together and we form the teams locally, then we can win this war.
You know, when I came back from Vietnam in June of 1971, I mean, I hadn't been out of combat, flew my last mission. I was 24 hours. When I got back, I landed O'Hare in Chicago. And within 35 minutes, I was sitting in a local VFW drinking beer with all my uncles and everybody else and my other buddies that had gone to war. And it's kind of like, what's wrong with this picture?
Exactly.
Anyhow, ladies and gentlemen, thank you, Gary Knoll. God bless you. Thank you again. This conversation will continue. I know we're all planning for another major conversation. And John, Gary, Denise, thank you, and God bless you all.
God bless you, Doug.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you, Doug.
Bye-bye. Hey, baby, just a minute.